This is James Evan Pilato from Media Monarchy, and you're listening to Sync Book Radio from thesyncbook.com.
I'm talking about a big coincidence.
There's the holy moment, and then there's the awareness of trying to have the holy moment. In the same way that the film is the actual moment really happening, but then the character pretending to be in a different reality. And it's all these layers.
We think everything is separate, limited. I'm over here, you're over there, which is true. But it's not the whole truth, because we're all connected.
The time as of now is now. And you are listening to Synchronize, the weekly audio magazine exploring and highlighting the best in the synchronistic arts. Please set your minds to open.
Open the floodgate doors.
Andras here. Alan has asked me to talk a little bit about the vision for the upcoming Olympia Sync Summit. Makes sense. I live in Olympia, and I have for more than a few decades. I wrote Accidental Initiations in the Kabbalistic Tree of Olympia about the sacred architecture of this town and its effect on me, and I'm the one who pushed so fiercely for the August 8th date. I've been celebrating 8-8 as the high holy day of Radio 8-Ball since at least 2000. The poetry of the 8 informs every aspect of my life, from the show I created, to the month I was born, to my first contemplations of infinity, even to its connection with the Nazis who terrify my family's dreams, H being the 8th letter of the alphabet and 8-8 supposedly being code for Heil Hitler. We could go down that rabbit hole at the summit, and if we did, it would likely lead us to the Kabbalistic Tree of Olympia, a 2-mile-long map of consciousness built at the end of the bloody Oregon Trail, incorporating a lake at its apex, in which can be found salmon, sea otters, and the vortices which are said to form where salt and fresh waters mingle. Not far from the banks of this lake is the venue where we will gather on Friday, August 8th, to participate in a Radio 8-Ball Pop Oracle at a little place called Rhythm and Rye. I wish I could tell you more about what's going to happen that night, but I am so deep in the ritual of rebirthing Radio 8-Ball in Olympia that all I can tell you right now is the show is actually getting stranger and more obscure and perhaps more fun. I'll tell you one thing I know about the upcoming Radio 8-Ball show. Ezra Sanzerbel will be playing a larger role, bringing his tone-color alchemy to the interpretations, and I, for one, am looking forward to seeing how that plays out. The second day of the summit begins with a guided tour of the Kabbalistic Tree of Olympia on Saturday morning, and I will be encouraging summiteers to take advantage of this artifact on their own throughout the weekend. Later that day, we'll move from Rhythm and Rye to the Olympia Ballroom, a century-old venue that sits directly beside the Kabbalistic Tree of Olympia between Hod and Chesed. After the tree walk on Saturday morning, having actively initiated summiteers into the Olympia of my book, I will relinquish the reins of the event to Alan. In fact, why not bring Alan Abadesa Green in here now to talk about his vision for this day of presentations?
Sure, I can clue you into some of what I know. On Saturday, August 9th, we will feature live presentations from Scott Onstott, Marty Leeds, and James Evan Pilato. Scott Onstott will give a talk on his forthcoming book entitled Quantification, Illustrations from the Creator of Secrets in Plain Sight. Marty Leeds will give a lecture on gematria and the English language with a focus on the sacred geometry of the human hands. James Evan Pilato is presenting material that I can't talk too much about, but I'll just say that it will involve a well-known family from a town called Springfield. We'll also be showing some sync films. Joe Alexander will be there to premiere his latest film, and I will be doing the same, premiering the first installment of my Suicide Kings video. We also have sync filmmaker Will Morgan. I believe he's doing something with Viggo Mortensen. I'm excited to hear more about that as that comes together. And then we have Rodney Asher, the director of Room 237. He'll be there to discuss his films, though we don't know what project he'll be screening footage from. I have a clip of him talking about it. Let's play that here.
Hey, this is Rodney Asher. I'm not completely sure yet what I'll be showing at the Olympia Sync Summit. there's a handful of projects that, you know, I've done that may or may not relate. I don't strictly consider myself a sync filmmaker, but I seem to have backed into the subject in a couple of surprising ways.
So much of Saturday is still in development, so this is just a quick overview and a taste of what's to come. When I have more information or updates, I will post them online at thesyncbook.com/OLY2014. That's thesyncbook.com/OLY2014. Also, I just want to point out that the presentations and videos are all just icing on the cake. As proud as I am of all the content that we're going to provide you, nothing, and I mean absolutely nothing, can top the experience of sharing live space. Talking about these things with people who don't look at you like you're crazy, but rather nod all too knowingly. Getting to look someone in the eye as you talk about these heady concepts, sharing a smile and a laugh, I can't tell you how amazing that is. I really hope you'll come share this experience with us.
One last piece I wanted to jump in and talk about is the place we're going to be staying. The Fertile Grounds and the Ground Inn B&Bs that'll be housing our guests and supporters are about 3 blocks to the southeast of the Tree, and they are just idyllic. Wooden, northwestern, hippie-style houses with a garden and chicken coops that supply the materials for the breakfasts we'll be eating, and a backyard with a fire pit and a really nice tree swing. I mean, it's going to be gorgeous.
Should we mention the Indiegogo campaign?
Well, yeah. But it'll be out of date when most people hear this. It only runs through May 24th.
Right, and we still need to raise like $4,000.
Although in the future, when people are listening to this, we will already have miraculously raised that amount. Let's just say then some, probably.
Okay, but how?
I don't know. Maybe people listened to this episode and got so inspired they bought up all 11 of the remaining $300 B&B perks, or maybe we had a huge run on the Dropbox 42
perks.
You know,
let's stop there. I don't think people get how cool that $300 perk is. I mean, not only do they get all access passes to the events, they also get 2 nights of lodging and breakfast at the place we're staying. This is going to be in the same place we are. They can be a part of everything that goes on.
You don't have to sell me.
Well, we better sell it to somebody.
I have a feeling that's what we're doing right now.
I hope it works.
Me too, brother. Me too.
This is Joe Alexander from Barely Human on YouTube, and you're listening to Sync Book Radio from thesyncbook.com.
So a crazy thunderstorm just started here, so I'm hoping if at some point I cut out, it just means I got struck by lightning and I'm dead. Or I went back in time to 1955.
I just got finished watching that like 2 hours ago.
All right, here we go.
The only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What'd you say? What'd you say?
A bolt of lightning.
What'd you say?
A bolt of lightning.
What did I just say?
A bolt of lightning.
What'd you say?
A bolt of lightning.
1.21 gigawatts. 1.21 gigawatts. 1.21 gigawatts. 1.21 gigawatts.
Joe Alexander, welcome to Synchronize.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, man. So, as you know, we're developing this event coming up August 8th and 9th in Olympia. And there, I know you're working on a video that is, if it's finished in time and whatnot, I'm not trying to put pressure on you, but I know we're trying to premiere a film. Can you tell me what it is, the film that you're working on? Give us a kind of rundown. What's the latest from Joe Alexander?
So my goal here really is to have a comprehensive Back to the Future analysis that people in the Sync community and people outside of the Sync community can get really, really excited about. You know, sort of to piggyback on what Rodney Asher did with Room 237, I really want something that has mass appeal because I get excited when people who are outside of synchronicity or synchromysticism kind of get sucked into it. And I think, you know, one of the best ways to do that is to create products, whether they're books, videos, or radio shows that, you know, have that mass appeal beyond like the nitty gritty details of our little synchromistic circles. So that's my goal, is to eventually create a video of that caliber. And so to that end, I'm continuing with my Back to the Future threads. I've got tons of other syncs that I've been following and watching with regards to these films. And a lot of them are still blowing my mind after years and years of watching these films. So I'm really excited about it. And I think everyone's going to be able to get a lot out of it. So that's it.
So for people who want to be able, I know you've already done, what is it, at least three, or is it four now, shorter Back to the Future exploration films?
Yeah, I've done three that are specifically focused on Back to the Future, and then one other one that is kind of loosely based on it. So really four, yeah.
And where can people find these? What's the YouTube address?
So my YouTube channel is BarelyHuman11, and they're all posted on there. But not all of them are labeled Back to the Future videos. You kind of have to just click on any random video, and it might be one of them.
I highly recommend everyone check out Joe's videos. They are, seriously, I feel like you raised the bar on sync film. Obviously, yes, Rodney, who doesn't consider himself a sync filmmaker per se, but Rodney has taken this to a level of mass appeal. But I just feel like you elevated our community's art form to a whole new level, and I really hope everyone checks your films out. They're just really mind-blowingly impressive. So,
thanks, thrilled. Alan. Thank you.
Now, we are going to play some Radio 8 Ball, if you're ready. So if you'll join me, let's bring in Andras Jones.
This is Gary Lockman, and you're listening to Radio 8 Ball with Andras Jones.
Welcome to Radio 8 Ball, the pop oracle, where we answer questions by picking songs at random and interpreting these randomly chosen songs as the answers to the questions, like picking musical tarot cards. Today's pop oracle features the music of Marty Leeds. Marty will be presenting material from his sync work at the Olympia Sync Summit in August, and tonight we'll be leaning on his music for the answer to Joe's question. And we will also be joined by Ezra Sanzer-Bell to help with the musical divination. But we have to start with Joe's question. So, Joe, what is your question for the Pop Oracle?
Okay, so my question is a little long-winded, and it has to do with my career. As with anyone, it's a big part of my life, and it has been my sole focus for the last decade or so, probably more. I have important phases of it coming up. I'd say defining moments that will be coming up in the next 12 to 18 months, and they're weighing heavily on my mind. So my question is, at this point in my life and my career, do I need to go into a mode where I let my previous hard work sort of speak for itself, if you will, in the sense that, have I already aligned all these dominoes and are they ready to fall for me? Or am I still in a stage where I really need to do a lot of hands-on setting up and tedious management of the elements of my career that need to be put in place for me to be successful? Have I already set things up? Is the universe ready to make things sort of happen for me? Have I done the bulk of the work, and is it ready to manifest, to materialize? Or, you know, am I still in the trenches? You know, do I still need to wake up on fire and wake up with the anxiety and the stress that I've always thought is needed in order to make this happen? So basically the gist of my question is, at this point in my career, do I need to be fire or do I need to be water? Do I need to be on fire every day, stressing about what needs to happen, or do I need to just be water and go with the flow and allow myself to flow, you know, with these dominoes that I've already set up, that are already in place? So which one do I need to be right now, water or fire? I need to know which of these two routes Which of these two approaches I need to take? And it's an important question for me to know the answer to at this point in my life. So that's it. There you have it.
Well, that's clearly a question that weighs heavy on you, and also one that I think we can all relate to in one way or another. So that being the case, we have 8 Marty Leeds tracks here and available. And I'm just going to play those in my shuffle function, and we'll see which one comes up. And then we'll interpret that with Marty, and with the help of Marty and Ezra. Here comes the answer. That was Song for the Daemon from Marty Leeds' CD Opus Medico Musica, the answer to Joe Alexander's question, should he be like water or like fire? when it comes to issues of his career in the coming year. So now we have Joe and Marty here. Before we bring in Marty, Joe, do you want to tell us a little bit about what you thought about that as the answer to your question?
Yeah, first of all, it's an amazing song. I'm actually going to listen to it in the future. It was, I mean, kudos to you, Marty. It was really, really impressive.
Thanks.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, the song right off the bat started off, you know, with the devil on my left and the angel on my right. And to me, it was just the perfect, you know, dichotomy between, you know, which path am I going to take? Am I going to follow, you know, the path of, you know, the devil, which, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily associate that with fire, but I would associate it more with pain and suffering and choosing to put myself through a hardship, you know, and then the angel, obviously the opposite, the water side. But there were just things all throughout the song. I'll just point out a couple to keep it short. Like you said, what's above is the same as below, which I thought was cool because I have something similar tattooed on me. I love that the main verse of the song was I choose love, for, you know, personal sync reasons, because in my Back to the Future sync video that I'm picking up now, the central theme and possibly the title of the video is going to be something to do with lightning and love being connected. So it was really fitting, especially since I just picked this up in the last 2 days. And lastly, I really loved how you used the phrase for no other reason than 'cause. And the reason I like that is because it kind of omits the first word, be, which to me kind of stresses it. So I thought that it, by saying no other reason than 'cause I choose love, I kind of interpreted it as be love, you know, just be love. And for me, that's, you know, that's really meaningful because no matter what path you choose, fire or water, all that matters is that you approach it without fear and, you know, from a place of love. So that's what I got.
Well, that's great. What did you have to say about that, Marty? Welcome to Synchronize, by the way, and thanks for contributing your music to that, to this musical divination.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm absolutely flattered that you chose my music. So that was a great breakdown of the song, by the way, man. That's pretty much exactly, Joe, what I was kind of going for. Song for the Daemon. Well, yeah, Daemon is basically, it's a guardian spirit, kind of known in Greek mythology. And so it's kind of like the idea of an anthropos or an angel or a muse or a helping hand. And it's basically this idea. It's a song for that. It's understanding that, you know, that there's a creative force within man and that daemon, that angel or whatever you want to say, that tethers us to the spirit realms, kind of. And that, like, artists are basically just secretaries for angelic revelation, that we are just kind of like conduits for bringing down these higher creative orders and bringing them below here on Earth. And basically, the song is essentially about kind of finding myself and realizing that ultimately you just have to end up loving yourself for who you are. You know, it's like what Swami Vivekananda said, you cannot love God until you love yourself, kind of thing. And so, I mean, that's basically what the song is about. It's just kind of, a glorification of a love song to that daemon, that creative force that's within man. And the chorus, I mean, for all the gematria heads out there, love in this cipher equals 14. And I say in the chorus, I say, I choose love, love, love. So I say 14 three times, so 3 14s. And then I say, I choose love, 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 3 14s. And then for no other reason than 'cause I choose love. And ultimately I say in the chorus, love 7 times and 7 equals pi. So it's like pi, pi, and then ultimately pi. So it's kind of what the song is about.
I think it's great that you brought that up because that is the material, some of the material you're going to be sharing at the Olympia Sync Summit, your work with gematria and the human hand.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, 14 segments of the hand. And so, yeah, love equals 14. And so that's kind of the idea that, if you will, the esoteric side of this is that the divine hand or the love of the creator is right on your hands. And of course, you use those hands to play the guitar and strum. So.
And speaking of playing the guitar and strumming, why don't we bring in our musical expert now, Ezra Sanzerbell, the author of Astro Music from Sync Book Press, as well as the Tone Color Alchemy Master, who's going to be joining me for some more Radio 8 Ball work moving forward, and will be participating in the Radio 8 Ball we present at the Olympia Sync Summit. Ezra, welcome to this musical divination, this segment of Radio 8 Ball on Synchronize. Can you help us to maybe understand how this song is a perfect answer for Joe's question?
Yeah, totally. Well, thanks for having me, Andres. And Marty, I also love the song, man. I picked up a couple things from both you and Joe that I wanted to mention before I go into the Tone Color Alchemy stuff. One is just the whole idea of like the hand of God. You know, the 10th letter of the alphabet, Yod, the gematria value of that is 14, Yod being 10 and Dalet being 4. So I had that like association that came through, whether that was intentional for you or not. But, you know, also corresponding to that with pi, the 3.14, the first digit there is 3. And 3 corresponds to Gimel, which is in the Tone Color Alchemy system. It's the color blue, and it corresponds to the high priestess and basically represents the water or the sweet nectar, the sweet liquids that are dripping down from the pineal gland or from Keter, the crown of the tree of life, down towards the heart. So basically it represents like the enlightenment of the mind reaching down and bridging that gap to the heart. Just connecting also with Joe Alexander and that whole like lightning love thread, somebody pointed out to me recently, you know, in the book, in Astromusic, I talk about how the tree of life really comes out of the flower of life, which comes out of the seed of life. And when you look at the flower of life design, basically what you have is a series of interconnected concentric circles that you can create a sine wave out of. A sine wave is basically just it's a pure tone. It has no overtones or undertones. And so if you were to there's actually an illustration of it in the book. It's a lot easier to see it than it is to describe it. But when I was showing this to a friend who's very familiar with the Golden Dawn system of magic and with the whole Tree of Life correspondence system, he pointed out to me that in the Tower card, there's an image in the upper right hand of the picture. And basically, it's this image of a lightning bolt that's coming down and it's striking the tower. And he pointed out to me that that actually represents the path from Keter, the top of the tree, going down from Chokmah to Bina to Chesed to Geburah through Tiferet down to Hod Yesod, Netzach, Hod Yesod and Malkut. It forms a lightning bolt. And again, this is something that would be easier if you have a visual in front of you. But what he was pointing out to me is if you twist that lightning bolt 90 degrees, it actually creates a sawtooth wave. And so he was sort of making this play on the idea of a sine wave and a sawtooth wave are both encoded into the Tree of Life. So anyway, I just thought it was interesting. But that segues in because the whole Tone Color Alchemy system is really based on the Tree of Life and gematria. It's a form of musical gematria. And something that nobody else pointed out yet, seeing that Joe was asking about whether to take the path of water or fire, on the one hand, yeah, you know, choosing the path of love would mean just following your Tao or following your way, which may be water or fire depending on the moment. But in the song, Marty actually sings something. I was just taking notes as I heard it, so forgive me if I don't have the lyrics exactly right. But something to the effect of, I've fallen down just to stand back up with my own two hands. I drink these waters up. I've fallen down just to stand back up, and with my own two hands, I drink these waters up. And so there was the water literally like comes up in there. And not only that, but the word water, the musical notes, well, the melody was this. When you sang the word water, you're singing the notes G sharp and E. And so G sharp in the Tone Color Alchemy system corresponds to the Hanged Man, which is elementally the one card out of the 22 cards that corresponds to water, Mem in Hebrew. And so it goes from Mem down to E, which is what this song is in the key of E. And so basically what I realize is that water, as G sharp and E corresponds to the major third and the root. And so in the key of E, water is really the thing that's giving the, it's providing the emotional context for this song. And so even though, you know, you could definitely do the interpretation where this song is saying, oh, follow your way, follow your path, choose love. It could be fire. It could be water. I was really seeing it more as emphasizing the way of water. I saw that encoded into the musical notes and into the lyrics. Probably unconsciously, but nevertheless, that's what I was seeing.
That's wonderful, Ezra. Well, I'll just toss in my two cents here, Andras here. I guess when I saw it, when it was talking about love, is when you talk about the Tao, that it's really talking about the middle way, that, as you were saying, that it's, that there is fire, that having access to that fire and also having access to that peaceful water, you know, that these are, that they're poles, like the devil in, on one shoulder and the angel on the other. And the truth is that in reality, we live between the poles and we live as a mixture of the poles. So to me, the idea of choosing love just to choose love had, it made me think of boiling water or of lava or of places where fire and water meet to create something that's even more powerful. Alan, did you have anything you wanted to contribute to this?
Yeah, I got very much this, a similar idea to you. And I was, it's funny because when everyone was talking, I was wondering if it was my own bias sort of, because this probably speaks a little bit to my, my personal philosophy and all these things. But you have fire or water, right? We have this sort of pillar of mercy or severity, right? We have these two pillars toward the tree of life. And then you have the supernal triad is, what is that? That's above that. You've transcended the duality. Again, middle pillar, all these sorts of things. So when he says, I have the devil on my one shoulder, the angel on the other, but it's a song to the daemon, which is the higher, that's the crown. It's above the physical shoulders, if it's, whether we're going to take this as pineal gland or anything literal like that. It's not a left shoulder, right shoulder. It's above that, right? So, and there's specific lyrics in there where he does say, I drink the waters, but there's also a specific line in there, and Marty, I apologize, I don't have the exact line. It's something kind of like thawing out is the message there, if not the the exact phrase. But speaking to me to that you need the water of life, but you don't want, like I'm saying, you don't be frozen.
Got my dreams up ahead, the nightmares on hold. The cold of these times ain't got me frozen.
So to be not be frozen means you need fire as well. So it's sort of like, yeah, you could be the water, but if you're always just water, that's a good way that you can get become stagnant. So you need to have some fire in there as well to make sure that you're not frozen. I don't know. I thought the song was just incredibly poignant for the question, and so I don't want to put too much of my own thing on, but that's definitely where I was getting was it's, you kind of like, it's, is it this or is it this? Is it this or is this? Well, it's this thing that transcends that. And maybe in a more practical answer, Joe, because your question really spoke to where my mind has been at. So, you know, I kind of took your question very personally and was very, you know, personally interested in the answer there. And it sort of, for me, came back as the answer that it always is. It's like, well, of course it's going to take fucking work, unfortunately.
It's been going well, but I ain't out of the woods just yet.
But it doesn't mean that you can't bring a level of flow and love and acceptance and grace to that work. So if you can kind of balance those two things out, that to me it's much in the way of balance.
Let's bring Joe back. Now that you've heard all of our personal interpretations and our take on it, what's your takeaway?
Well, first of all, it was just really, I guess, special is the word to hear, you know, everybody give their two cents on it, which, you know, I never could have extracted all the meaning that you guys had. I mean, Ezra, your point about the entire, I guess, tonal makeup of the song, you know, pointing towards water, I thought was really exceptional, especially since you said, you know, when they hit that note, I think you said it was a G, you know, Marty actually said the lyric water. I thought that was really significant. But I also like everyone's overarching theme of balance that, you know, with this sort of a question, it seems like fire and water are obviously both going to play their roles here. It's achieving that balance. That's the important thing. The other thing that I thought was, Andras, I think you brought this up about falling down to stand back up, or maybe it was Marty. I can't remember. But to me, I just wanted to point out that was really significant because a lot of what I'm going through right now has to do with I had broken my leg previously, and so I thought that was significant, you know, that the lyrics spoke directly to it. And Alan, you said that the song was really poignant, and I can't agree more. It was just on point. I can't think of a song better speaking to the question that I had, and I'm really glad that this is speaking to you as well. I'm sure that, you know, I'm not alone in wanting to know the answer to this type of a question, so I'm excited to see how the rest of these songs play out.
One other thing it just made me think of, just as we're wrapping this up, you know, when it's talking about love, you know, that's sort of a catch-all word. What I noticed was that in talking about the things we do for work, that whether it's the fire or the water, that the love is in the passion for what we do and in the pleasure we feel in the doing of that thing that we enjoy. So I guess that was the thing that it made me think of, is that sense of loving what we do. And in that case, then the appropriate fire or water just emerges out of that childlike joy, pleasure in the doing of something. So I'm just wondering if that's something that you can presence that'll help you to find the correct answer for yourself going forward over this next year, where there's going to be some fire and some water that are both required.
Oh boy, I think that's right on point, Andras, because I guess you could say that, you know, whether something's interpreted as stressful, and so it's in the fire side, or whether it's interpreted as flow, you know, that is all relative, really. Something that's difficult for someone could be easy and joyful for someone else. So, and the determining factor there is whether you're enjoying what you're doing. So I definitely think that plays a big role in the answer to this. And for me, I guess the answer is whichever side it is, fire or water, you know, working your butt off or, you know, letting things flow. All that matters is that, you know, you're enjoying yourself and you're putting your heart and soul and passion into it. And yeah, I think that's big.
Hmm. Yeah, if I may add one thing quick, you don't mind? Yeah, you know, the Star of David is both the sign of water and sign of fire. And it's, of course, the merging of the two. And so the idea is actually to bring, as Alan was saying, it's like kind of the balance of the two. Of course, that's exactly what the Star of David is. But of course, in order to like bring, if you bring fire and water together, water will put out fire, of course, or, you know, so you need actually a pot or a vessel to boil that water to actually separate the fire and the water to actually, you know, bring them together. And that vessel is, of course, the human being. And so, you know, just kind of that idea, once again, the balance of the two, you need both the fire and the water in your own pursuit, whatever that creative pursuit is, in any pursuit in life. That's what the esoteric symbolism of it is anyway.
Totally. Right. I'd also like to jump in with one other thing, which is that in the key of E, you know, there's three different tone colors, that correspond to that. So you have Aleph, Bet, and Tet, you know, or in the tarot, you would have the Fool, the Magician, and Strength. And I find it relevant that Aleph and Bet are the two paths that lead to the pillars of mercy and to severity coming from Keter. So coming from love, which is that singularity point at the top, the crown of the tree, coming down to either side, that corresponds to the idea of like with the two hands drinking the water up. But also with Tet, the card of strength, you have the image of the lion. It corresponds to Leo, and you have the image of this roaring lion being tamed by Sophia. So the mother goddess is just standing there patiently and with kindness. And so it's kind of that balance of on the one hand being invigorated and having passion, and yet at the same time having that higher wisdom, which is that feminine guidance, the Shekinah, which is taming and tempering that the beast within, and really that is that middle pillar, that middle path between mercy and severity.
Ezra, I'm buying your fucking book right now.
Right on.
I hope everybody does. You know, there's I just want to say that strength card. I don't know if you've seen. I want to say it's the Visconti deck. There's old versions of the Strength tarot card that does not show a woman with a lion, but instead shows a woman with a broken pillar. It's a common piece of imagery from Masonic symbolism. You see it a lot of like Masonic certificates. like a woman with a broken pillar and like a Saturnian figure over her shoulder. But there is specifically, and I hope I'm not getting this wrong, I think it's the Visconti deck and a few around that time period that show a woman with this like thick column broken, and that's the strength card. And I'm not sure if it's meant to imply that she is so strong that she's able to break this huge pillar or to repair it. But when Joe spoke of his broken leg, I couldn't help but see that in my mind. The sinks here are sort of, especially with five of us in this call, it's so easy to spin out of control. But Andras knows I'm working on a film that I hope to be showing alongside Joe's, and a good deal of my film deals with the symbolism of a broken leg. So, Joe, I didn't even know that's what you were going through. It's sort of, it's just amazing that it's sort of, we're all sort of encoded in each other's lives and mythologies here.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I've definitely found that I can't escape the personal sinks of the other people in this group too. It definitely feels like we all are on, you know, the same boat sometimes. So,
and that boat is going to be pulling into Olympia, Washington in August of this year. And I'm looking forward to sharing sinks real time and real place just a few months out. And if this is a hint of what we have to look forward to, it's going to be even better than I imagined.
This is Michaela J., the voice of the corporation, and you're listening to Sync Book Radio from thesyncbook.com.
Hey, Michaela, did you see my tarot cards?
Drop box 42!
Throughout the ages, seekers of wisdom have sought the legendary artifacts which are purported to hold the secrets of the universe. From the quest for the Grail...
I saw you with the box! What was in the box?
...to the Philosopher's Stone...
What's in the box?
...to the Ark of the Covenant...
What's in the fucking box?
Humanity has demonstrated an archetypal yearning for insight into life's mysteries. There are those who insist these items are merely the stuff of legend, metaphors, and allegories, but there will always be those intrepid individuals who refuse to accept this humdrum view of existence and will continue to seek out this legend stuff. Today, within the community that devotes itself to the exploration of synchronicity, one can hear murmuring of just such a repository of wisdom. What it is and what it contains are not yet known, but the possibilities fire the imagination.
Hey, this is Rodney Asher. I'm a filmmaker who's been, you know, making my own insane short films and videos for over 10 years. If I'm known for anything, it's probably Room 237 and Dropbox 42. Man, I've got no idea what would be inside such a thing, but I'll have to go out on a limb and guess that it's a complete run of the 1980s DC Comics revival of The Shadow, written by Andrew Helfer and drawn by Bill Sienkiewicz and Kyle Baker. Fingers crossed.
Hey, Marty Leeds here. What do I think is in Dropbox 42? I think it includes the Achromatic Codex that allows us to decipher James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake, only to find that the book is merely scrambled and jumbled versions of scripts from the late 80s syndicated sitcom Designing Women.
I know what I'd like to submit to Dropbox 42. I would love to contribute a collection of alchemical images complete with commentary on how to interpret them symbolically from an expert in the field who actually is responsible for coloring a number of famous alchemical pieces.
All this conjecture is certainly food for thought and grounds for further research, but what of the people making Dropbox 42 available? Alan Abadesa Green is one of the creative forces behind the Olympia Sync Summit, and they have recently made this item available as one of the perks for their Indiegogo campaign to raise funds for said gathering. What do they say it contains?
Dropbox 42 is pure content. Taken as a whole, it provides context for the summit we're engineering in August. Some of it's legal, much of it isn't. The project began simply as a way of offering content to our followers, but it's taken on a life of its own, and even though I'm one of the people responsible for its maintenance, even I'm not sure exactly what it contains. Honestly, the only way to find out what's in it is to join the Indiegogo campaign and contribute to its creation.
There you have it, a Schrodingerian mystery box in which we are the cat and the researcher chasing our own tail as it traces the universe. Fanciful? Perhaps. But behind this whimsical fascination lies something more. What that something is will only be revealed to those who participate in the Olympia Sync Summit Indiegogo campaign, which is something we encourage you to do before May 25th, 2014, when the campaign ends and Dropbox 42 is revealed to those courageous enough to seek its wisdom.
Sync Book Press and Radio 8Ball invite you to the 2014 Olympia Sync Summit, the weekend of August 8th in Olympia, Washington. Hosted by Alan Abadesa-Green of Sync Book Press and Andras Jones of Radio 8Ball, featuring a guided tour of the Kabbalistic Tree of Olympia. Speakers include Rodney Asher, Joe Alexander, Marty Leeds, Will Morgan, Scott Onstott, James Evan Pilato, Ezra Sanzerbell, Michael Schott, Andy Schmushkin, and many more. Please support this event by visiting thesyncbook.com/OLY2014. That's thesyncbook.com/OLY2014. For links to the campaign, where you can purchase your pass to the event or one of the available Sync perks. This promises to be the most ambitious and intimate Sync Book event yet. Will you be coming to Olympia?
Andras here again. After all this talk of Olympia and the Kabbalistic tree, we figured it might be a good idea for me to describe this artifact. Of course, that's what I did in my book, Accidental Initiations, but much as I'd like everyone to read it, I know that some of you won't, and I want to make this easy. So here's what you can do. Pause this podcast and bring up Google Maps. Look up Sylvester Park in Olympia. If you're familiar with the Kabbalistic tree, you can begin to find this image in the park. The base of the tree, or Malchut, can be found at the old state capitol building. If you zoom in, you will find a statue of a kneeling Freemason directly in front of this large stone building. Then, if you use the navigator, you can turn the view around as if you were standing in front of the Freemason. What you will see before you is a simple small town park, but it reveals something more to the initiated. At the center of the park is a gazebo that holds the spot of Tiferet, or the heart, and before that, a statue that holds the space of Yesod. Using these markers and the kneeling Freemason of Malchut to orient ourselves, we can begin to explore the tree. At the four corners of the park, we will find four cement circles full of earth and seasonal flowers. These circles hold the space of Hod, Netzach, Gevura, and Chesed, oriented just as they would be in the Tree of Life. The brown building that sits just to the north of the park across Legion Way is the Olympia Ballroom, where we will be hosting the Saturday festivities at the Sync Summit in August. Now, to find the top of the tree, we must move beyond Sylvester Park and its many monuments to Capitol Lake. If we were walking, we would cross Capitol Way at the western edge of the park, pass through an alleyway emerging on Columbia Street, on which we turn left with a quick right on 7th Avenue. There before us sits the lake I referred to in this show's opening. If you zoom out of street view and look down upon the lake, you may notice a pair of circles. One, a swirl on the north side of the lake, the other a C-shape at the southern end of the lake. The C to the south juts out into the water and stands for Bina, at the top of the feminine pillar of the Tree of Life, while the swirl to the north is actually a small landlocked mound that stands for Chokmah at the top of the masculine pillar of the Tree of Life. Looking at it this way, the lake is revealed as Da'at, or the abyss. Now, if you zoom into the top of the lake, its westernmost point, you will find an unassuming black metal bench that sits in for Keter, the top of the tree. From here, one can sit and soak in the majestic energies of this artifact before beginning the journey back to earthen realities. The Kabbalistic Tree of Life is generally seen in images. Kabbalists are encouraged to meditate upon this image to raise their consciousness. I've found that being able to inhabit this image has tremendous value, and I look forward to sharing this walk with those of you who choose to attend the Olympia Sync Summit. Well, that's it for episode 6. I hope you enjoyed it. On behalf of Alan and myself, I'd like to thank Ezra, Joe, and Marty for participating in this synchronized episode, and thank you for listening. Here's hoping we see you in Olympia at that million-dollar bash.
Million-dollar bash. Million-dollar bash.
Well, that big, dumb blonde with a wheel-gorged turtle at friend of hers with his checks all forged and his cheeks in a chunk with his cheese in the cash. They're all gonna be there at that million-dollar bash. Everybody from right now to over there and back, the louder they come, the bigger they crack. Come now, sweet cream, don't forget to flash. We're all gonna meet at that million-dollar bash. Ooh, baby. My counselor out to the barn. Silly Nelly was there, she told him a yarn. And along came Jones, emptied the trash. Everybody went down to that million-dollar bash. Ooh, baby, ooh, ooh, baby, ooh, it's that million-dollar bash. Well, I'm hitting it too hard, my stones won't take. I get up in the morning, but it's too early to wake. First it's hello, goodbye, then push and then crash. Well, we're all gonna make it at that million-dollar bash. Ooh, baby. Ooh-wee. Ooh, baby. Ooh-wee. It's that million-dollar bash. Well, I looked at my watch, I looked at my wrist, I punched myself in the face with my fist. I took my potatoes down to be mashed, and I made it on over to that million-dollar bash. Ooh, baby. Ooh, ooh, baby. Ooh, it's that million-dollar bash.